Welcome to That's Not How a Baby Sleeps, the podcast where parenting meets hilarity. I'm your host, Alicia Daishon, and I've got the fantastic Eleni Katsinis as my co-conspirator in all things baby and toddler sleep. We're not your average sleep consultants, no cry it out nonsense or sleep training at all for that matter.
Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. How was your weekend? How was Nora's birthday?
It was so much fun. I was very emotional, but we had a really good time.
I feel like they are all really emotional, especially as you're getting to like that 4 year mark. Like, she's not a baby anymore.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. It's like every year I feel like it's gonna be, you know, emotional for me. And we watched the new Bluey episode. I don't know if you guys watched it yet. We watched the new one on
Is
her
there
birthday.
New ones?
There's a new one, and everyone's talking about how sad it is. And I was like pulling myself like a baby. And you know, it's just like a lot of feelings at once, you know?
I'm so excited that there's a new Bluey episode. We're going to watch that later now.
Just be prepared to cry. So if you don't feel like crying, then don't watch it.
Oh, yay. I'm so excited. So what did you guys end up doing this weekend then? Like, was her birthday, was her birthday Sunday?
Yeah, her real birthday was on Sunday, so we had a party with family. And then Saturday, we celebrated Dave's birthday with friends.
Yeah.
So we went for like drinks, and you know, we were a little tired the next morning. We'll never do that again. We should go out with friends and drink the night before our daughter's birthday, but it was a lot of fun. We had a fun weekend.
Good. That's awesome. Did she like her bike?
Yeah, she likes it a lot. But she has to just get the hang of it, you know, just like pushing the pedals and just like, you know, but it was so funny because the kid's bike that we got her, it's cute, but like the pedals are kind of like slidey. You know how they're like grooves in like a pedal that kind of like plants the foot? It doesn't have that, which I thought was weird for a kid's bike. So if she's having a hard time, we're gonna have to get her new pedals. But other than that.
Yeah, they are a little bit weird. Like, it definitely took Aylin a while to kind of get the motion going. Like, it was that pedaling motion was quite
And just
difficult.
like looking up and staring at the same time, like,
Yeah,
so
because you're looking down.
yeah, she just has to get the hang of it. I think she'll catch on quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Okay, so today we're going to be chatting about supporting emotion. So a huge component of what we do as sleep consultants involves supporting families in setting boundaries around things that are no longer working for their family. Boundaries tend to come with tears. And although we don't use sleep training methods that involve leaving your child to cry alone, that doesn't mean that your child won't cry when we change the way that they fall asleep or during big transitions like weaning. Tears are okay and are a healthy part of building a securely attached child, but we want those tears to be supported tears. They need to be supported tears. We know from a neuroscience standpoint that small children, they're not able to downregulate their emotions from a heightened state of stress. That does require contact and support from an emotionally regulated caregiver. And this is how self-soothing is truly taught, not from cry it out or leaving your child to cry alone in intervals. Children need to have the tears around the things that they cannot change in order to accept, adapt, and move forward. Developmental psychologist Dr. Gordon Neufeld refers to this as the adaptation process. So we did ask our community for some questions that they had around supporting emotions, whether that's related to sleep or just toddler tantrum. So we're going to go through all those questions together and just give you guys some insight on that and just share some of our own experiences when it comes to supporting emotions, because we both have toddlers and have been through the supporting emotions quite a bit. So first question is, I am trying to stop nursing to sleep at night, but my 16-month-old cries horribly and sometimes hits me whenever we try. So the biggest thing that Eleni and I always talk about and why we think that one of the reasons that weaning came relatively easy for both of us is really those daytime boundaries. We usually recommend around like 12 months, ensuring that you are setting boundaries. They don't have to necessarily be around nursing, but just boundaries during the day and looking for opportunities to support emotions. Boundaries are going to look different for every single family, but looking for opportunities, you know, when your child is having those big emotions, big temper tantrums, to support them through that instead of using distractions, try to make the tears stop. We really want to focus on those daytime boundaries during the day, because that's going to kind of roll over into your nighttime sleep when you are wanting to make changes around nursing. Your child has heard the word no before, and you've kind of been through that whole adaptation, supporting emotions aspect already. It's a huge part of shifting sleep associations. And this could be the same thing for, it doesn't have to be necessarily around nursing, but like rocking to sleep, stuff like that. We really need mad to turn to sad in order for our children to kind of accept, adapt, and move forward. So that's always our number one recommendation with looking at night weaning, is focusing on those daytime boundaries first. If you are planning on weaning overall, they definitely can be around nursing, but they don't always have to be. They can be around, you know, safety, things like that. Did you want to add anything to that, Eleni?
I was just going to add about the hitting. I feel like that we talked about that in another episode with, like, you know, the boundary around hitting. Of course, like, that's an age where they start to hit, but it's like, you know, during the day, I'm sure if they're hitting you at night because you they want to nurse, they're probably hitting you during the day. So just setting that boundary, like, we do not hit, you know, I will gently hold your hands, I won't let you hurt mommy, you know, you can't hit mommy. And just like you said, like, keep doing that boundary, setting that boundary. They're going to have tears around it, but just like, there's like that switch that you'll see mad turn to sad. Like, they're going to be mad at you, they're going to be probably trying to hit you again, we'll be crying. And then and their tears and their cries will even sound different when it turns to sad. Like, they'll accept comfort and they'll accept a hug, and then like that's when you can really support the emotion. I know you were sad, but, you know, and then talk to them about whatever happened.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that looking at that switch is a huge thing, because you are right that the cries do sound differently. And I think a lot of parents, when we talk about supporting emotions, they're like, my child is so angry. Like, they won't let me hug them, they won't let me touch them, stuff like that. And that's because they're still in that mad state. We have to let them go through the whole emotion of mad, make sure that we are keeping their body safe, keeping your body safe. So if that does involve taking them to a safer environment to support emotions, that is ideal. Cradling them if they tend to, you know, throw their body around, just cradling them to the ground, letting them kind of roll around, do their thing, and until that kind of switch goes off, and then they move into that sad emotion. How long it takes, I think it really depends on the child and temperament and how long you've been practicing this. I think initially when we start to set boundaries, especially if we're kind of already in that toddler stage, like we haven't been really playing around with boundaries until, you know, from that 12 month mark, and say we're at 16 months now and we don't really have any boundaries, we do find that that whole process can take a lot longer the first few times that you practice it. But really just holding that boundary and staying firm on that. And when we talk about night weaning, we have a whole episode on weaning, so definitely check that out. We usually like to do one wake up at a time. Like, we never want a parent in a situation where they are saying no and supporting emotions all night long. That's just going to be an overtired mess. You're going to be exhausted the next day. So definitely one wake up at a time. Practice supporting emotions at the first wake up. The first few times you try it, you might end up nursing back to sleep. You can just count those as practice rounds. It doesn't mean that you failed by any means. It's just that, you know, it takes a while for you to get used to supporting emotions and your child to kind of get used to those boundaries and going through that whole process. The next question that we had, so husband is questioning why letting our child cry while we hold her is better than crying in her bed if we are standing next to her, rubbing her back, singing to her, etc., while crying. So first, neither situation is bad as long as you're able to stay regulated yourself. Both involve being with your child and supporting emotions. I think it's a matter of your child's temperament and what you're comfortable with. If you have a really hard time not picking your child up and regulating your own emotions while sitting beside them and just comforting them that way, then that's probably not an option for you due to co-regulation. And that's okay. When we look at highly sensitive children who often have highly sensitive parents, an approach like this is probably not for them. Children who are highly sensitive do require more contact to down-regulate and kind of regulate those emotions themselves. So it's just not a necessary approach. And I think it kind of comes back to those gentle approaches to sleep training. They both operate under the idea that children have to fall asleep independently in order to sleep well at night, which is just simply not the case. So if you feel more comfortable supporting emotions in arms, then do that. If you have more of an easygoing child and you are looking for them to fall asleep a little bit more independently, then yes, like staying with them, supporting them through that whole emotional process is okay. Neither is damaging in any way, as long as you're able to stay regulated in both of those situations. But I don't think that you need to take approaches like don't make eye contact, don't touch them for X amount of time. You don't need to do any of those kinds of things. You can follow your instinct and still support your child and stay with them, you know, and they'll let you know if the whole laying beside you and crying is okay with them, or if they want more contact. I mean, you could absolutely set a boundary on it, but you're going to have to kind of follow your child's lead on that and see. So neither situation is really bad. You're not using separation-based sleep training to have your child fall asleep independently, but it's really what you're comfortable with. And, you know, you could definitely take two different approaches. Like, we have some moms who will fully rock their child to sleep, and then we have other situations and stuff where dad with their sleep associations where they just lay the child down and sit with them and use their own sleep association. So if you guys are not kind of seeing eye to eye on that, then you can definitely both take different approaches. It's not really confusing for the child because children develop different sleep associations for different people. So that would be an option too, if you guys are kind of, you know, on the fence about what works best for your family.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, obviously it depends on the family situation and what they're dealing with. Like, why don't you want to hold your child to support them to sleep? They don't really think about what your goal is. And if this is more, like you said, like a, if the partner is trying to push more of a gentle sleep training approach, I feel like this kind of reminded me of it. But I guess just like if you're okay with it, but if you don't want to rock your child to sleep anymore, then yeah, that's totally a thing, a boundary that you can set. And then, oh, I'm not gonna rock you, I'm gonna sit next to you, but I'm still here for you. You know, it's like your child will be supported either way. I feel like so many parents like don't ever want their children to cry because it's sad to see them cry, but that's how children communicate with us. Like, they're going to cry. Our kids are going to cry about a lot. So like we said, as long as they're supported tears through that, then they know that they're supported by us, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's totally fine if as long as you're staying with them and supporting mm-hmm. them kind of through that. And I think this is kind of an approach that sometimes we'll take with much older children that we're working with. Neither of our kids have ever fallen asleep independently. We both lay with our older children while they fall asleep. We love it. It works for our family, but there are some situations where it doesn't work. And that's where we can kind of, you know, okay, we're going to set a boundary. We're going to gradually move away from rocking to sleep. I'm going to sit with you. I'm going to support you through this whole process. I'm going to rub your back. I'm going to sing to you. And, you know, maybe gradually you're peeling back those layers of association. So maybe you're initially sitting right beside them, rubbing their back, singing to them, and then eventually you move to, okay, I'm just going to sing to you and I'm going to sit beside you. Like, you can make your own approach to this. You don't have to follow specific rules, and you can kind of tune into your child and see what they need at that point in time. So definitely nothing wrong with either approaches, as long as you're there and you are regulated yourself. Next question was how to not get overwhelmed, triggered during a toddler full-blown meltdown. So I just wanted to clarify just the difference between a tantrum and a meltdown. So a meltdown is a reaction to a sensory overload, and a tantrum usually has a purpose. It's a reaction to a boundary. For meltdowns, we really just want to change the environment, move somewhere quiet, calm, be calm and present, and try not to throw more at them. I think a lot of the time we go into fixing mode where we're trying to like talk to our child during these temper tantrums and meltdowns. They can't learn when they are dysregulated. So it's just pointless. So just staying calm, just being present. Their nervous system in a meltdown is already overloaded. So just avoid kind of talking to them unless that's what your child needs. This would be a good time for like fidget toys, relaxing music, stuff like that. But you really are going to have to tune into your child during a meltdown and just know what their sensory profile looks like, what things calm them and what things, you know, get them riled up again. So for a temper tantrum, you're going to continue to calmly hold the boundary and just stay with them. I think focusing on your window of tolerance is a big part of not getting overwhelmed or triggered. So the window of tolerance is the time between your triggered and your reaction. So a lot of parents, we will go into either fight mode, flight mode, freeze, or you'll have a fawn response. So fight, you'll get aggressive, you'll get mad, you'll get angry, you'll yell. We've all been there. Other one is flight, you'll need to walk away. If you kind of take an approach to parenting that isn't really like gentle or authoritative, you might resort to timeouts in this situation. Like, I need to be away from you. That could be your response. So I know sometimes I will walk away because I feel like I need a timeout, which isn't always the best, but I feel like sometimes it is better than yelling. So freeze, you literally just don't know what to do. You'll just freeze up. I've been in this situation as well where I just don't have anything to say that would be productive at this point in time. And I just kind of freeze up and don't say anything. And then fawn, you're trying to fix things immediately to kind of make those tears stop. So this is where the using distraction kind of comes into play. We really want to avoid the fawn response. The other responses we can kind of work on and get to the root of like what is actually triggering you in the first place. Sometimes I know with moms, I don't know about you, Lenny, but I get like really overloaded, sensory overload. Where there's just too many sounds going on, the TV's on, Alexa's playing music, like there's a whole bunch of stuff kind of going on, and my child is crying, and then have another one like whining in the corner. That's just too much for me. So I feel like that can be a really triggering aspect for myself, and I know it is for a lot of other moms. Or is it your inner child that is triggered, which is really, really common? I feel like both happen to me depending on the day. I found it's really, really helpful. Obviously, therapy is helpful, but I found it really helpful to understand my attachment style and how I personally attach to my parents due to the way that I was parented. So I've learned that I have kind of an anxious, preoccupied attachment style based off of just previous relationships that I've had. You can actually go online and take like an attachment style quiz, where they will ask you about like just your previous relationships. And I actually did this test twice. So the first time I did it, it was based off of my like current relationship with my husband. And it was like, oh, you're securely attached. And I'm like, I feel like something's wrong with that, because I mean, I feel great now. Yes. Like I do feel like I've healed a lot. There's definitely always places that I can work on. So I went back and I actually took the test based off of like previous relationships that I was in, and previous relationships prior to my husband were emotionally abusive, physically abusive. Like I definitely did. I feel like it's every parent's nightmare to have, especially daughters, go into situations and stuff like that. That's the absolute worst case scenario that I could possibly think of with my children. So knowing that that is my attachment style and how I attach to previous relationships, I feel like that's a huge component of why I parent the way that I do, and has really kind of helped me, okay, understand like this is why I am the way that I am, and different things to kind of look for when parenting my own children. So you can kind of go through that quiz and then look at like what are the causes of an anxious, preoccupied attachment style? Like how can I avoid that with my own children? What do I really, really need to focus on? So I feel like that's really helped me with parenting my children. I still get overwhelmed. I still lash out. There's definitely times where I am not regulated, but I feel like knowing why I am the way that I am has helped a lot with dealing with those triggers, and really just not taking those tantrums like personally. Like they're developmental, right? Like it's normal for children to have those big emotions. And I think the biggest thing is that we like apologize and we repair and focus on what we're going to do differently next time. I think being the perfect parent, it's not crucial for building a securely attached child, but reflection and repair is. Like that's a huge aspect of it. And I think any of us, like when we got apologies as children, they were usually like, I'm sorry, I yelled, but you did this. You know, like there was always some blame put on there.
Yeah, I think when we always talk about supporting emotions and like, you know, during those temper tantrums, obviously your kid's not a bad kid. Like they're going through a hard time, and these temper tantrums are really important developmentally. And I feel like a lot of parents don't realize that, especially the older generations. they're uncomfortable with emotions. So they want the emotion to stop. But like, we understand that it's so important for them to go through. And I definitely feel like I get triggered by Nora's. I don't get triggered by her big feelings. Like I'm fine with her temper tantrums. Like she's so sensitive, and I understand she has really big ones. They're intense. They gotten better. You know, we go in waves, but it's more just like the whining and just like the not telling me why something's wrong. It's really triggering to me. And I think it probably is from my own inner child personally. Like maybe like I was whining as a kid, and I wasn't,
I was
like,
gonna say, were you whining and getting the same response that you're giving?
Exactly.
It's very triggering. Whining is a huge one for me, especially when I get older. It's like, just tell me what you want. Why are we making that sound?
Exactly. But whining's a communication. You know, like I read this in one book, like it is, they're communicating to you, and it's that whiny voice. And like, if I'm in a good mood and I'm like co-regulated, like in a healthy way, it's like I try to make her laugh. Like I don't want to distract her, but I'm like, huh, you have a whiny voice. Like, why do you have a whiny voice? I'm gonna tickle the whiny voice out of you. Like things like that. Like I don't make tears stop. I don't make temper tantrums stop. I always try to help her. But like situations like that, if I'm trying to like stop the whininess because it triggers me and I don't want to like get triggered in that moment, you know.
Really, yeah, there's a way to be play, and I mean they connect and attach so much through play, so I think that's like definitely a positive way to kind of like redirect it and then have that conversation after. It's like, hey, like, can we communicate our needs in a different way? We had the same thing happen actually last week where Aylin was doing, it was the day she had we'll call it a mental health day, where she stayed home. She was whining and I was just finishing up work, and it was just like, I was very triggered by it. I was like, can you please stop making that sound? And then we had a conversation. We went and picked up her sister from daycare, and we had a conversation in the car, and I said, hey, like, I'm sorry that mommy got like upset with you whining earlier. I know that you were just trying to get my attention, but like, do you think that there's other ways that you can get my attention? Like, can you just say I need your attention, or I'm feeling this way? And I asked her, I'm like, do you feel like sometimes mommy doesn't listen to you? She's like, yeah, I feel like sometimes you don't listen to me. I'm like, okay, that's something that like I can work on. And then we were at Costco and she wanted a specific type of yogurt that I wouldn't buy. She wants the one that has like the fruit jammy stuff at the bottom that she gets to mix in, which was $5 more and I wasn't paying for it. So she was in the cart, like starting to whine. And then she stopped herself and was like, I'm feeling really mad that you won't buy me that yogurt right now, mom. And I'm like, okay, like, let's praise this type of behavior. You're still not getting dang yogurt. But yeah, so that was really, really good to see. In the long run, Costco ended up being an absolute nightmare because my youngest started crying too. And then Aylin was triggered by something else. And then all of those conversations went out the window. But for a moment there, I was like, oh, it's working, right? And we've seen since then, like little instances of that where she's like communicating how she's feeling. And I've just shared, you know, like when you whine like that, it's very, very triggering for mommy's ears. Like I would like you to communicate in a different way. So like we've been kind of focusing on that. But I think a huge component is having those conversations after, because they're not, people try to teach all these lessons when their child's having a temper tantrum. And I think, you know, go to your room and think about what you've done. It's like, they're not doing that. They're not looking at the correlation. You've just immediately threatened separation, or are separating from them, and it's not going to solve anything.
Exactly. Right? They're using a different part of their brain during that temper tantrum and not think logically. I mean, young children still have a hard time thinking logically because their brain is not the ours is. But I mean, like, they're not using that brain logically. So it's like they cannot, like, if they're hitting you, you don't hit me or whatever, like try to like, oh, you're in trouble, you have a consequence. Okay, they're not going to understand that in the moment. And like, I think we all have that hard time like trying to teach something, or I feel like that's why the older generation or other people might think our kids are labeled as brats or spoiled, because during the temper tantrum, they maybe look like they got away with it, or like, you know, I just always say, like, you have no idea what I talked about with Nora, like after the fact of that. Like, yeah, maybe it does.
When she's regulated, when everyone was regulated again. Yeah.
When she's regulated, when she's calm, when I'm calm. I mean, I try to stay very calm during temper tantrums. You know, obviously they're hard if they go on longer, but like we always say, the more you support the emotion, the faster it will go away. And like, they're still going to have tears around stuff, but it's not going to be as much, as frequent, like as intense. Like if you have a highly sensitive child, like we do, maybe it might last a little bit longer. I think like, what is it, like 7 to 9 years old, their brain, like, doesn't, you know, it takes a little bit longer for them, but if you keep practicing the way that we are, then it does come like faster. I feel like, you know, like we both
think I've had to remind myself of is just that, like, I'm watching Luna, who's 2 now, stop herself and take these deep breaths when she's having a hard time on her own. And it's like, and it's so bad because we've said something about it in front of Aylin. And then she started to feel bad that she can't do that, but she's highly sensitive. Luna's not. Like, there's tidbits of stuff that she's more sensitive about, but like, she is going to take longer to learn how to downregulate her emotions and not be so triggered when these things happen. And it's just a waited out process with them. Unfortunately, it's hard because, like, you look at a 2-year-old and I'm like, okay, we're at 5 now. Like, we still have another 2 to 3 years, but she's starting to try. Like, I'm watching her. Before, it would be like, Aileen, let's try to take a deep breath. And she'd be like, no, I don't want to take a deep breath. And would just flat out refuse. And it's so triggering. I'm like watching a 2-year-old be like, I need to take a deep breath. And she does 2 deep breaths and then hops off the bed, laughs, and goes back to play. And I'm like, cool. She's more regulated than I am.
I know,
But
'cause I'm working on this.
so, next question that we had, thoughts on the advice to ignore tantrums to make them stop. There is a parenting coach. I don't know if you've come across her. I hope you don't, because she will trigger the crap out of you. But she, her, she's obviously, you can tell she's a boomer. She's a lot older. And her advice is like, nope, you just ignore the tantrum to make the tantrum stop. And no, that's not something we recommend. It's a behavioral approach. So clearly this person does take a behavioralist approach to it. It's similar to cry it out and other separation-based sleep training. It extinguishes the behavior and the parent just assumes the problem solved. But it just sends the message that your emotions are not okay and the tears might stop, but the emotions are just internalized. Like, there are other ways to make tantrums stop. The answer is connection. It has nothing to do with just ignoring the behavior to make them stop. Like, that's not a good idea. The child is not learning the skill because they're not able to regulate their emotions alone. Like, we know that it's neuroscience. I can't believe that this narrative is still being pushed around. And I think a lot of it comes from, like, people just are like, oh, well, they're having a tantrum to get attention. What solves attention seeking? Connection solves that. It's not that complicated. And we see that all the time where it's like, oh, they're just doing that for attention. Yeah, they want your attention. You're their parent. They have an attachment relationship with you and they are craving that connection with you. So they might be doing something annoying or acting out, or using a behavior that's not great to get your attention. And that's when you give them that connection and then work on, you know, okay, how do we address this behavior in a different way after they are regulated? Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's very similar to like separation-based sleep training, really. I mean, like that your tears are not okay, you're showing all your emotions are not okay, and you will be, you know, I will ignore that emotion, which is like they're obviously seeking something from you. Like, even I don't want to ever label children bad, but bad behavior is attention-seeking behavior. So, you know, they're having a problem, they're having a hard time, and just like with sleep, like you're showing them that when you're having that hard time, I will not be there for you. I will ignore you. You know, it's like, it's so tough. I don't know. I read someone or someone said something like, okay, if my child's hitting me, like I will walk away because it's hitting's not okay. Or like if they're hitting me and they're right next to me, they're hitting me and they're not respecting my space. Like sometimes Nora's like, I always talk about safety and like even respect of your body. Like, mommy needs a little bit of space right now. Please move over. And she won't. I'm just like, you're not respecting my space. Like, I need a little space. So, like, I literally physically get up and walk away. I'm like, Nora, I told you I need a little bit of space. Cause me and my triggers, I get triggered. Sometimes I'm super touched out and she gets super upset because she's so sensitive. But then, like, I come back and sit down. So, I'm not necessarily ignoring her. I'm just trying to tell her, like, hey,
You're
you
holding a
know.
boundary, but you're
I'm
not like.
holding a boundary and I'm supporting her still through that boundary. And like my daughter's so sensitive, I cannot ever use separation-based things on her because it will like honestly, I feel like it would scar
Break
her.
her heart.
It really would. And I just like I want to do it. It's just like the same thing with like sending them to a timeout. I feel like ignoring temper tantrum. Just like if they're having a temper tantrum, send them to timeout. They can figure out on their own. How is a 2 or 3 year old going to figure out their own, their big feelings that they're experiencing? You know, that's how attachment works, meaning to accept and invite them in their presence in all emotions. Every single raw emotion they experience, we need to accept it. You know, it's just like, would you ignore your partner if they came home crying to you because they had a really hard day? No, you wouldn't. You would
I would
accept
hope not.
them. I know. And if they do, then you need to go to figure that out.
Go counseling with your partner.
Exactly. I mean, they're gonna embrace you. They're gonna be like, oh, I'm sorry you had a hard day. Let's talk about, you know, it's like we always just look at kids so much differently as we do as other human beings and not realizing that they are human beings just like us. Like
Very
they're gonna.
underdeveloped human beings that might, you know, express some irrational things that to us like don't make sense, but to them it's a huge deal, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Like they want the blue plate over the red plate.
It's,
And they will
it's
like,
usually not about that. It's, there's some other underlying thing that is making them upset about the blue cup versus the red cup.
Exactly. And then like, if you keep talking about your children's emotions with them and support them through it, they will be so emotionally intelligent. Like we've seen that with our daughters. Like it is amazing the things that we've seen and heard from them at such a young age. And just like you said with Luna, like taking a deep breath, like I know adults that can't regulate their own emotion. They'll punch,
blowing.
You know, they'll punch a hole in the wall to get mad. That makes them feel better. Okay, good for you. But it's like you have to, those deep breaths and those calming techniques that we're teaching our kids are like really great. And I know you have it too, but like we use a calm down corner and that has really helped. Definitely not during the temper tantrum. It's more like a after the storm calm down corner. I feel like because like the temper tantrum is so intense and she's having a hard time regulating herself. We're down, but when she turns that mad to sad and she's still
just sad,
we go to the calm down corner and relax and calm down. I have a bunch of like puzzles or books. I have like great calm down books. I have some things on the walls that like are breathing techniques that help her, and she really, really enjoys it. So I know a lot of families probably benefit from that.
Absolutely, yeah. And just not using that as like a punishment or anything like that. And 100% agree, we can't go in there when we're mad. It doesn't work. There's just flailing around on the floor.
I feel like the more practice we will get there, like when they're a little bit older, I'm feeling mad, I'm gonna go in my calm down corner, or I'm feeling this feeling. And we always say that, like, how are you feeling? I tell Nora, you are sad or you are mad. I never have that because it's like they're identifying with that and that's what they become. And you know, as silly as that sounds, it really is true. We have to identify the emotions for them to, you know, help move past it and like understand that they can feel two emotions at the same time, which also doesn't come later in development. So those are
yes, that's a big one. They can't have mixed emotions. I can't remember what the age is on that. Do you remember?
I think it is around 5 to 7 or like 7 to 9 for highly sensitive kids. That's when like the piece of your brain is connecting. It's like that little bridge that starts like connecting the pieces. Like they understand like, oh, I can be sad and be
feelings.
Happy. Yes, I can have both feelings. That's why so many young kids, when you're like, how was school? It was either bad or good. It can't be both. You know, it was overall good, but I had a bad moment. So they like, they stick in that bad moment. You know, it's like, it was, you know what I mean? So
I think that's a big reason I didn't really even think about this, but like Aylin can't grasp the fact that like if we watch like a happy movie and like, because my husband, he cried in a movie recently and she was like mortified.
Aww.
Like she was like looking at him going, why are you crying? Because like to her that's sad, right? Like
yes.
She doesn't understand the happy tears aspect of it yet, and she will sit there and like belittle him. Stare him in the eyes and be like, you better not be crying, dad. Like, it just makes her uncomfortable. She can't comprehend it. I'm wondering if that kind of plays into it, because it's pretty funny.
It could, or it could be just things that she might be hearing at school from other kids, because their parents tell them, don't cry, you're a big kid. You know what I mean? So you have to think about all that stuff. Like tears make people so uncomfortable, so they will do anything to stop the tears. I always laugh with my sister-in-law, because when she had her younger daughter, like when she would cry, she was very attached to mom, which is obviously, we know, is healthy and normal. Whenever she would cry, everyone would do anything to make her stop crying, like everything in their power, clap in her face, give her a toy. I'm just like looking, we're both like laughing. Like, just let her cry. She's crying for a reason. Like, we don't have to distract and stop the tears. I would just always laugh with Dave about it. I'm like, I need to make a reel about this as two adults, like, and you start crying and they start clapping in your face. Or start distracting your emotion as a grown adult. Can you imagine having a conversation with a friend
weird.
And they start distracting you emotion? Like, okay, let's go do something else instead. Like, no,
well, you're really sad about whatever. And it's like, no, I'm going to distract you with like, hey, come look at this. It's like, how unsupported would you feel?
And like, I always feel better after talking about it and like having a good cry sometimes, you know, with the friend or like your husband's like, you know, you talk about what you're feeling, you cry about it a little bit, and then you feel so much better. And if I suppress
so much better.
That, and if I didn't talk about it, and like, of course you don't have to cry if you don't have to cry, but just like, it feels so much better after the fact.
They
and,
just
like,
feel those emotions. Absolutely.
It really does. And our kids are going through that.
Well, I think adults need to go through that adaptation process too, right?
Yeah. As we get in as kids. A lot of us didn't as kids, so we're trying to do it as grown adults alongside our children. So it's like, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah. I know you just mentioned one thing that like you don't, like things that you don't really say to Nora, like you don't label her emotions and stuff when you're supporting emotions. And I think that's a pretty common people will be like, oh, like that's what you should be saying when you're supporting emotions. And I feel like when we look at like gentle parenting, a lot of the times it's like, oh, you should be like labeling those emotions and telling your child, oh, you're really sad right now. But I
do that, but I always use the word feeling, or you are feeling.
Okay.
This way. I won't say like you are sad, because like literally kids become that identity. Like no matter what you say to them, like, you know, if a child gets told like, this is mean, but if a child gets told like you're fat as a young kid, they're going to be, they're going to, that's their identity. And like, if they're being told other things, that's their identity. So that's what I mean by that. I mean, definitely during a temper tantrum, I don't say much. I kind of just sit calmly and like, you know, offer support if she wants it. And then after the mad turns to sad, that's when I start to talk. Oh, you were feeling sad. Yeah. You are feeling mad. Like, and that's what I, but obviously, you know your kid best and you know what to say to help them best through it, you know, especially depending on temperament. So like, I'm sure we say different things to our kids or don't say anything at all or talk about it after. And that's where like the emotional intelligence comes in. When you do label those feelings, you know, like they understand, like
become self-aware.
Yes, I was feeling mad, so I did that. Okay, well, you did that. That's not okay to do that. So let's talk about what we can do next time. Like if you're feeling sad or mad, how can we help you through that instead of throwing your body on the ground or hitting mom or hitting the dog or whatever, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of scenarios that we can talk through.
Yeah, because that was a question, is like what I'm supposed to say when I'm supporting emotions. And honestly, I don't feel like I say that much. I feel like when I do try to say things, it's not met very well. So I think it's best for just personally with my daughter, because she is so highly sensitive, to not say a ton until we are through that mad wave and we're kind of into that sadder wave. And that's where we can kind of start talking about, you know, how we were feeling and why we acted the way that we did, and address those maybe negative behaviors that we would prefer not to have and would like to have something else in place of that behavior that is a little bit more productive and, you know, acceptable.
Exactly. I mean, that's why I feel like when people say, what am I supposed to say during supporting emotions, it's hard to say much when they're having that big temper tantrum. Like I wanted to share a story. Nora just had a really big temper tantrum the other day. It was actually the solar eclipse day. But maybe the moon, whatever was going on.
The moon was messing with Aaron last week. It was for sure.
But she I don't know what happened. I think I try to give her choices, you know, to avoid those power struggles. And she has a big thing with screen time that really messes with her. But like, it was time to turn the TV off. I said, turn off the TV. And she did it. And I was like, I'm going to tell you that you can do it or I'm going to do it. And she wouldn't. So I did it. Freaked out, and she was like really tired too, so I know that played into fact. And we were at Dave's parents, so she was right next to his dad, and she's freaking out, throwing her body and like hitting him. I was like, you are hitting him, you need to calm down or I'm gonna move you and put you somewhere safer. So she did it, so I picked her up, but they're throwing her body around like a crazy person, and I brought her somewhere safer, like in a calm down space, because his parents have like a room for them too, which is nice. So we're sitting there, she's freaking out, crying, you know, so upset. I'm like, I told you, you know, like I'm sitting there very calmly with her. She's mad, very mad, and just wouldn't calm down, and so mad at me. But I'm like, okay, I'm still here for you. Like, I'm going to calm down. I want to go downstairs. I'm like, I know you do, but we have to calm down first. Like, I'm here to help you, whatever. And she just gets really intense and with her emotions. But eventually she like calmed down enough that I let her leave the room, and she did. And she went downstairs and I just like let her do her thing. And she's kind of crying, like her sad cry now. It wasn't the mad cry. It was the sad cry. And she's on the couch by herself. I look at her and she's like, mom. And I'm like, yeah. And I sit with her and she hugs me and we're like hugging each other. I was like, are you okay? Do you feel better? And she's like, I was feeling so sad. You took me away and I wanted to sit with Papa. And I'm just like, she's talking through what happened. And I told her why I did what I did. You know, you weren't safe. You were hurting Papa. You know, we need to move away when you're doing that. I know, but I want to turn the TV off. And, you know, we just kept talking about it. And I just told her what happened. And she was still sad about it and still worked herself up and would cry. And I calmed her down. I was like, you know, it's mommy's job to keep you safe. She's like, oh, I know, it's your job. And she needs it. It's just like so amazing to sit there and like listen to her like talk about her emotions, you know, like how intelligent she is in that way, and like to express to me like how she was feeling, and like I made her feel that way, but she understands why I did it, and then like we repaired and, you know, we're good. And then she actually went over and apologized for hitting him, and like it's just like And that sequence, I'm sure people think like, wow, she gets away with everything, or like, oh my gosh, like she has a behavior problem, you know, just like seeing that. But like, if anyone heard that conversation, they'd be like, whoa, like your kid can talk like that at 4 years old. You know, it's like, I should have recorded it because I was so proud of her. And I'm obviously proud of myself too for just staying calm and regulated. Because if I started yelling and doing, it would just like, you know, it's
It
not
never goes
a future
well.
disaster. Yeah. So
Yeah.
just
You
very
have these
proud.
like out-of-body experiences while you're yelling, knowing full well this is going to escalate the situation and make worse, but you still do it sometimes because you're
I
so
know. Of
triggered.
course.
It's
And
so
we're babies. We're
hard.
not perfect. And the thing is, we are here at this point at 4 years old because we've done it for so long, all these years. And since she was probably 12 months old, and she's still gonna have temper tantrums, she's still gonna cry about stuff, but it's just like different now. And it's just a cool thing. So everyone's like, what does this mean when I talk about support emotions? Why do I have to talk about support emotions? This is why, because you will see these beautiful things unfold and your child becoming like adaptive to situations. And even like at the store the other day, there's this always is like little checkout area for kids. They can like pick a free snack. And Nora walked by and didn't grab it. And like I just didn't think about it. We kept walking and we left the store and she's like, I didn't get my free snack. I'm like, okay, embrace yourself. She's about to freak out. And then I was like, oh, we already walked by it, like next time. And she goes, okay. I'm like, oh my gosh, did that happen? I was like, holy smokes. I'm like, that is crazy. I'm like, but it was just, I know, but it's just cool to see those little moments. And she does get better at things. I'm like, okay, she's about to freak out. And she'll go, okay, mama. I'm like, wow. Like, so it really does click at some point too, I think, like at an age. But
Think
of course,
that's a day too.
that's
Again,
very true. But I just, I
tired,
mean,
are we
like,
hungry? All of those things play
of
into it as
course.
well, for
Of
sure.
course. But keep doing it, keep practicing it, and then you will see these things unfold. It's so cool to see.
It really is. I think one thing too, especially like with being triggered, I think a lot of us are triggered when we're out in public because
Embarrassed.
we're like embarrassed about, these big emotions, our children, throwing temper tantrums. And I think that just comes with time and just being, understanding that it is normal from a developmental standpoint and just really not caring what anyone else thinks. I think there are situations where we've talked about this before, like in a grocery store, I'm probably not going to let you throw your body on the ground just because that's not safe, right? I'm going to move you to the car and we're going to go through that whole emotional process in the car where you're not, vulnerable and out in public and throwing all these temper tantrums and stuff. But I personally am not embarrassed about the situation. It's just more so I want to keep my child safe. So having that option in the back of your mind, if you are out in public, if you are in public with like family members, things like that, who might have their own opinions, it doesn't matter what they think. You can, I always say like in, 5 years, 10 years, when my children are all, very emotionally mature because of all this work that I'm put in, I'm going to be like,
I know.
about any of those comments that you kind of get about your child and what's been going on with them and those big emotions and stuff. But yeah, it's always
No,
fun.
for sure. We'll definitely see it. But I feel like, do you think there's times where I'm sure people ask this or think it that it's okay or like to let it slide to distract an emotion, right? It's like the grocery store situation, or like obviously if you like I feel like some parents are worried, like, oh my gosh, I distracted an emotion that one day. Am I messing them up? Like, obviously not. Like, one time, it's okay. But if you just continue to have those conversations about support emotions and identifying feelings, like, overall, it's great. Like, I'm sure we both have distracted emotions some point.
Absolutely. I kind of say like 90% support emotions, 10% distraction. It kind of depends on the situation. Where am I emotionally at that point in time? Like, are we out in a grocery store? Am I completely overstimulated at this point in time? Like, I'm the mom who has like those lollipops in her bag for when I start to see meltdowns happening and when I'm out in public. I'm like, here's a lollipop. Okay, let's get us through the store and then we'll deal with consequences later. Because at some point in time, those emotions that they're feeling, they're going to come out later. It's just going to be at a home when I'm not, out in public trying to wrangle two children while grocery shopping. So.
Exactly. And that's what I talk about with Nora too. It's like, okay, I maybe I distracted you from that feeling you were having in the grocery store. Like, I want you to know that it's always okay to cry. It's always okay to be sad, you know, but during that time, it wasn't safe for you mentally. And I try to explain to her what that means. Like, it's not okay for people to stare at you and you trying to deal with your feelings. Like, that's, you know, that's kind of scary for a little kid.
Yeah,
And
it's scary for a
that's
child.
not fair, especially other kids walk by and they just stare at them like they've never cried before.
Yes.
The judgment of other little kids is always makes me laugh.
Totally, for sure. One other question that we had was, what if your child is pushing you away and doesn't want to be touched when they're kind of going through that whole emotional process? And we touched on this a little bit. I think you more so touched on body, like having boundaries around bodies and stuff like that. Like if Nora's been, you know, getting too close to you and you need space. And I know we've talked about this before, but like you and Nora's love languages are a little bit different. You get really touched out and she's like, I want to touch you all the time. So it's definitely difficult. But when we're dealing with big temper tantrums and we have families who say to us, like, my child is so angry. That's that mad process that they kind of need to go through in order to accept contact and connection and stuff. They need to move into that sad state in order to be accepting of that. If your child doesn't want to be touched, like, you don't have to leave them alone. You can just sit nearby and stuff and still give them that kind of space, and then wait for that adaptation process to kind of take place. And then, you know, usually most kiddos, when mad turns to sad, they will kind of accept that contact and stuff. And that's like, that's, we love when that light switch goes on. It's like, okay, we're halfway through it now. Now you're just going to be sad and cry in my arms for, you know, an extended period of time, usually depending on which child it is that I'm dealing with.
I know. I feel like with this question, maybe they think like during the actual like support and emotions process, or they think they have to like physically like comfort them. And like, of course it depends on your child's temperament, but like just you being there in their presence is still comforting to them. Like, don't think Absolutely. You have to like be overbearing, hugging them and like saying a million things. Like, there's no right or wrong way, really. Well, I guess there is a wrong way, but there's no like right way to do this. You know, it's like, you know your child best, you know what you can handle, what they can handle. So it's like, you, like you said, they will want that hug after the fact. Like, they might not want it during. Like, Nora's very affectionate and physical, but during a temper tantrum, she yells at me. She doesn't want to be touched. Like, she just wants to go through it and she's freaking out. And then like, even after, when she turns the sad and then we talk about whatever happened, she'll apologize to me for whatever she did. I'm sorry for hitting you, or I'm sorry for yelling at you that way. And it's because of all these conversations we had.
Absolutely. And I think too, the more and more times you practice this, it's going to give you an idea of what to kind of expect with your child. And you're able to kind of ride that emotional wave. It's like, okay, you know, they don't want to be touched initially when I'm supporting emotions. I'm just going to be present, stay regulated yourself, and be there for them. Like, you don't even really have to say much. Like, mommy's here when you need me.
I was just about to say that. We say that same thing. I'm right here if you need me. No, don't talk to me. Okay. I'm still
here to help you.
Yeah. And I love you. I still love you.
Love you. Yeah. I think one thing too that we're kind of getting into now as well that can be really triggering is the like almost personal things that my child will say, like, I hate you, I don't love you anymore. We get some of those now, and I think it's definitely like an age thing where that is triggering to most parents to have your child say that. I remember my mom, when I would say those things to my mom, because I did, and we didn't have a very good like supporting emotions relationship and stuff. I would say those horrible things to her to get her riled up, and like it worked every single time. But I think that can be really triggering for a lot of parents, and I think your window of tolerance can be a lot shorter. So that's definitely a challenge and stuff. And I think that goes back to, obviously, that behavior is not acceptable. We don't tell people that we don't love them and that we hate them and whatnot. And having a highly sensitive child, she immediately feels horrible that those things even came out of her mouth. And I can see it in her face afterwards. So usually we're able to kind of work through that and then have those conversations afterwards. I think it's only happened on like one or two occasions where she's said kind of venomous, mean things. But I think a lot of parents do experience that as well. Your child is, you know, mad. So they say things that maybe they heard from another child, because those are obviously definitely things that we don't. That's not the type of language that we use, but I think it's more common as they move into like school, kindergarten, stuff like that, where they are around other kids who might say those types of things and project that onto you. And it can be a very difficult thing to manage. And I've found that, you know, that kind of stuff is triggering for me, and I can even, you know, relate it back to my own childhood, as I mentioned. So again, just staying with your child, supporting them through that, and then addressing that type of behavior afterwards.
Yeah. And they definitely don't mean what they're saying in that moment. No. Like, she doesn't hate you. Like, she loves you. So even us as grown adults, we say things to our partners or to people that we don't mean. Like, I've said things to Dave. I'm like, what am I talking about? Like, I don't mean that. Why would I say that to him? Like, it's just because of our not, you know, we don't have emotional regulation, or we don't have calming techniques and tools that we're trying to give our kids.
Totally. Absolutely. It's definitely a hard thing to kind of tackle as a parent when you didn't get that in your own childhood, for sure.
Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to connect with us beyond the podcast. You can find myself on all social media platforms at moonbay.sleep. And for more parenting and sleepy goodness, hop over to Instagram and follow Eleni at EleniCats. Until next week, keep embracing the chaos and remember you're doing an amazing job, even if it doesn't feel like it.